this film has been formatted to fit this screen to run in the time allotted and edited for content. A blue-toned photo of a studio lot wavers, then turns into the WB Shield, Warner Brothers Pictures, an AOL Time Warner company. On a black background, blue rays fan counterclockwise. A silvery V with five smaller Vs inside appears. Village Roadshow Pictures. Now in a bare room, a chair sits on a wood floor. A scruffy man in prison garb sits.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please state your name for the record.
Daniel Ocean.
Thank you. Mr. Ocean, the purpose of this hearing is to determine whether, if released, you are likely to break the law again. While this was your first conviction, you have been implicated, though never charged, in over a dozen other confidence schemes and frauds. What can you tell us about this?
The prisoner shifts in his seat.
As you say, ma'am, I was never charged.
Mr. Ocean, what we're trying to find out is, was there a reason you chose to commit this crime, or was there a reason you simply got caught this time?
My wife left me. I was upset. I got into a self-destructive pattern.
If released, is it likely you'd fall back into a similar pattern?
She already left me once. I don't think she'd do it again just for kicks.
Mr. Ocean, what do you think you would do if released?
Ocean shifts his eyes slightly. Now a guard walks him down a hall to a checkpoint. There, another pair of officers usher him to a desk. Later, wearing a tuxedo, Ocean tilts a small manila envelope and a wedding band drops into his palm. He studies it thoughtfully, then clenches his fist around it. Later, with his jacket collar turned up, Ocean exits the prison into a parking lot splotched with melting snow. Titles appear. Warner Brothers Pictures presents, in association with Village Roadshow Pictures and NPV Entertainment, a JW Section 8 production, Ocean's 11. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Dutch Priest, Stacey Perlman, Justin Soule, and Carrie Canning. Read by Miles Neff. Nighttime. Our view zips over an ocean toward a brightly lit coastal city. Now, clean-shaven, Danny Ocean rides an escalator. Wearing a light brown jacket over a chocolate dress shirt, he casually enters a casino. With his hands in the pockets of his dark trousers, Danny passes rows of slot machines and roulette tables. Later, Danny sits at a blackjack table. Words appear, Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Chips, please.
Sure.
He hands the dealer some bills.
Change 150. Would you like quarters or nickels?
Quarters are fine.
The dealer gives him some chips and he places a bet.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Danny sees a pudgy man in a dealer's vest talk to a pit boss, then head for his table.
20. Dealer has 19. Good start.
The dealer pays Danny his winnings.
All right, going on break now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
He tips her. She shows her hands palms up and leaves.
You have a good one.
The pudgy dealer takes her place.
How are you, sir?
Hello, Frank.
The dealer freezes, licks his lips, then eyes Danny coolly.
I beg your pardon, sir. You must have me confused with someone else. My name is Ramon. As you can see right here.
He points to his name tag. Danny smiles.
It's my mistake.
No problem, sir.
Table's cold, anyway.
Danny picks up his chips.
You might want to try the lounge at the Caesars. It gets busy after 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock?
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Ramon.
The dealer watches Danny leave.
Thank you.
Now in a plush lounge, the ex-con sits at a bar peering at a newspaper clipping headlined, Las Vegas Landmark to be Razed. Former casino owner denounces plans.
Checking up on current events?
The dealer sits beside him.
Ramon?
Glad to meet you. Frank Catton can't get past the gaming board. You just got out?
This afternoon. You seen him?
Last I heard, he was teaching movie stars how to play cards. Why? You have a plan already?
Are you kidding? I just became a citizen again.
Now at a payphone.
Officer Brooks, this is Danny Ocean. I was told to contact you within 24 hours. No, sir, I haven't been getting any trouble. No, sir, I haven't been drinking. No, sir. I wouldn't even think about leaving the state.
Now a young man with short blonde hair leans against a car. The smartly attired man eats nachos from a fast food container, then licks the fingers of his tattooed hand. Words appear, Hollywood, California.
Hey, Russ. Rusty. What's up, man?
Tossing his food container, Rusty enters a gated hallway with Topher Grace.
Let me ask you a question, man. Are you incorporated?
Rusty shakes his head.
Well, okay, if you're not, you should really think about it, because I was talking to my manager last night.
Bernie.
No, not Bernie, my business manager. Actually, you know what, they're both named Bernie. Anyway, he was telling me that because of what we do can be considered like research for like a future gig or whatever, I could totally make it a tax write-off. The one thing is, and this is like just his thing, stupid, but I'd have to pay you by check.
Passing between them, a cocktail waitress carries a tray over her head. What? As Rusty stares, Topher gestures nervously.
We could just stick to cash. Yeah, let's just stick to cash.
They pass through a crowded nightclub. Now at a backroom poker table, Rusty sits with a half dozen young actors.
We're going to begin with five-card draw. Everyone remember five-card draw?
Oh, yeah.
Who wants to start us up? Josh?
Yeah.
Joshua Jackson takes the cards and deals to his right.
Josh?
Yeah.
To the left. Deal to your left. Shane?
Hit me.
It's not blackjack.
Barry Watson stares at his cards.
Looking at him doesn't change him. You know what you have.
Joshua deals to his right.
Josh.
Left.
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 Left. I'll get that. I'll get
left.
That.
Lady bets.
Holly Marie Combs bets a chip.
Blue.
Blue. That's a 50.
Call.
Ooh. Okay. All right. James calling.
Topher throws in a chip.
What the hell? It's only pocket change, right?
How you bet is your business. You want to make them think you're betting for a reason.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Barry sets down some cards.
Right.
All right, how many?
Four. Nice. You don't want four. You want to fold.
I want to fold?
Fold.
Is that okay?
Okay.
Done. What are you doing?
You're done.
Dealer will take three.
You're done. Shane, you got three pairs.
Yeah.
You can't have three pairs. You can't have six cards in a five-card game.
Josh.
Maybe one was...
Josh. Me. I'm not the guy with
the cards.
Fellas.
All.
Okay.
Reds.
Topher lays down his hand and high-fives the other players. Rusty smiles at the cards, a mix of hearts and diamonds. He lifts his glass, presses it to his temple, then takes a sip. Later in the club, he finishes off another tumbler of whiskey as he watches scantily clad dancers in windowed booths above the bar. Smiling, a bartender serves him a fresh drink.
How's the game going?
Longest hour of my life.
What? I'm running away with your wife.
The bartender gives a thumbs up.
Great.
As Rusty rests his jaw on his palm and stares blankly toward the dance booths, Danny walks behind him. Later, he returns to the back room. Danny sits beside Topher.
It's hard to do, isn't it? Passing over from television to film?
Not for me, dude. Oh, hey, Russ, we got another player, if that's cool with you.
Rusty meets Danny's gaze and nods slightly.
Mr. Ocean, what do you do for a living, if you don't mind me asking?
Why would I mind you asking? Two cards. I just got out of prison.
The players trade sober glances.
Really?
Well, why were you in prison?
I stole things.
You stole things? Like, jewels?
Ink and matrimonial head masks.
Rusty grins wryly.
Any money in those? Ink and matrimonial
head masks. There's some. Don't let them fool you. There's boatloads. If you can move them. Take one. But you can't.
My fence seemed confident enough.
If you're dealing in cash, you don't need a fence.
People lack vision.
Probably everybody in cell block E.
That's $500.
Guys, what's the first lesson in poker?
Never bet on the,
leave emotion at the door.
That's right, Topher. Today's lesson, how to draw out the bluff. That much money, this early in the game, I'm saying he's holding nothing better than a pair of face cards. Bear?
Barry studies his cards, fidgets with a stack of chips, then throws in his hand.
Careful.
Joshua adds chips to the pot.
Josh? Don't worry, I'm game. I will see your 500, and I will raise you another 500 of my own.
That's a very handsome bet, Josh. But be careful. We don't want to push him too high too fast. And keep him on the leash. Holly?
Call.
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 And I'll call.
Shane and Topher also throw in chips.
I'll see you 500. Raise it 2,000.
Guys, you're free to do what you like. It's a lot of money. But I'm staying in. He's trying to buy his way out of his bluff.
Danny meets Rusty's smirk with a steady gaze.
Josh? Two.
Joshua drops a stack of chips in the pot. Holly Marie tosses in also.
Atta girl. Call.
The others do likewise.
Call.
Danny picks up his cards.
Let's see him.
He lays them down.
I'm not sure what the four nines does, but the ace, I think, is pretty high.
Dude! Thanks for the tip on calling out the bluff.
Now, outside the club, two bouncers man a door cordoned off from a crowd. One unclips the rope as Topher exits. As the actor signs autographs, Rusty slips past him. He whisks and straightens his shiny silver tie as Danny catches up. They head down the sidewalk. Later, in a convertible, Rusty drives his old friend down to Los Angeles Boulevard.
God, I'm bored.
You look bored.
I am bored. So how was the clink? Did you get the cookies I sent?
Why do you think I came to see you first?
Now at a restaurant, they sit in a dark booth.
So tell me.
It's tricky. It's never been done before. So I need planning, a large crew.
Guns?
Not exactly. It's a lot of security, but the take.
What's the target?
8 figures each.
What's the target?
Danny sips from a coffee cup.
When was the last time you were in Vegas?
What? You want to knock over a casino?
Danny shakes his head and holds up 3 fingers. Looking away, Rusty sips his coffee and shakes his head. Later, in a dimly lit office, they study schematic drawings of a huge casino vault.
The vault at the Bellagio.
The floor plan shows a circular vault door.
Oof. Well, if I'm reading this right, and I'd like to think that I am, this is probably the least accessible vault ever designed.
Yep.
You said 3 casinos?
These feed into the cages at the Mirage, the MGM Grand, but every dime ends up there.
The Bellagio, the Mirage. These are Terry Benedict's places.
Yes, they are. You think you'll mind?
More than somewhat. You'd need at least a dozen guys doing a combination of cons.
What do you think?
Well, off the top of my head, I'd say you're looking at a Boski, a Jim Brown, a Miss Daisy, 2 Jethros, and Leon Spinks. Not to mention the biggest Ella Fitzgerald ever. Do you think you're going to get the money to back this?
If we're hitting these 3 casinos, we'll get our bankroll. Benedict's got a long list of enemies.
Yeah, but enemies with loose cash and nothing to lose.
Danny gazes steadily.
Reuben.
Reuben.
Hey.
A security guard aims a flashlight.
Oscar. Lower it a bit, would you?
Sorry. You guys done up here? Found what you want?
I'm just going to take these home for the night and make some copies if it's all right.
Whatever you need.
Appreciate it.
Danny takes the rolled up schematics and they leave. Facing an elevator, Rusty thoughtfully rubs his thumb along the corner of his lip.
What?
He faces his partner.
I need a reason. I don't see money. Why do this?
Why not do it?
Rusty's incredulous gaze remains fixed as he soberly shakes his head.
Because yesterday I walked out of the joint after losing 4 years of my life and your cold decking teen beat cover boys.
Rusty reluctantly nods in agreement.
Because the house always wins. You play long enough, you never change the stakes, the house takes you. Unless, when that perfect hand comes along, you bet big and then you take the house.
Rusty pensively lowers his gaze.
Been practicing that speech, hadn't you?
A little bit. Did I rush? It felt like I rushed.
No, it was good. I liked it. Timby thinks harsh.
They board the elevator. Danny flips the schematics back and forth.
I wonder what Reuben will say.
Daytime, Las Vegas, Nevada.
You're out of your damn minds. Are you listening to me? You're both of you nuts. I know more about casino security than any man alive. I invented it, and it cannot be beaten. They got cameras, they got watches, they got locks, they got timers, they got vaults. They got enough armed personnel to occupy Paris.
Reuben eats a salad.
Okay, bad example.
It's never been tried.
Oh, it's never been tried. It's been tried. A few guys even came close. You know the three most successful robberies in the history of Vegas? Number three, the bronze medal. Hanselneck grabs a lockbox at the horseshoe.
In a flashback, a man grabs the box and runs. Guards tackle him.
He got two steps closer to the door than any living soul before him.
Hey, take the money!
Second most successful robbery, the Flamingo in 71. This guy actually tasted fresh oxygen before they grabbed him.
A guard whacks the long-haired thief with his baton.
He's breathing out of a hose for the next 3 weeks. Damn hippie. And the closest any man has ever come to robbing a Las Vegas casino was outside of Caesar's in 87.
A man runs with an armload of cash.
He came.
Guards give chase.
He grabbed.
They shoot him in the back.
They conquered.
The man falls in the casino's circular driveway and the money rains down around his body.
But what am I saying? You guys are pros. The best. I'm sure you can make it out of the casino. Of course, lest we forget, once you're out the front door, you're still in the middle of the damn desert.
Rusty and Danny smile.
You're right. He's right. Reuben, you're right. Our eyes were bigger than our stomachs.
That's exactly what it is. Pure ego.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
Thank you for lunch.
You swell was delicious.
Sorry we bothered you.
Look, we all go way back, and I owe you from the thing with the guy in the place, and I'll never forget it.
That was our pleasure.
I'd never been to Belize.
Give Dominic your addresses. I got some remaindered furniture I want to send you.
They start to walk away.
Look, just out of curiosity, which casinos did you geniuses pick to rob?
Bellagio. It's the Bellagio, the Mirage, and the MGM Grand.
Reuben drops his fork.
Those are Terry Benedict's casinos.
Rusty and Danny stop.
Is that right?
That's right.
Reuben catches up with them.
You guys.
He peers through huge sunglasses.
What do you got against Terry Benedict?
What do you have against him? That's the question.
He torpedoed my casino. Muscled me out. Now he's gonna blow it up next month to make way for some gaudy monstrosity. Don't think I don't see what you're doing.
What are we doing, Reuben?
You're gonna steal from Terry Benedict. You better damn know. This sort of thing used to be civilized. You'd hit a guy, he'd whack you, done. But with Benedict, at the end of this, he better not know you're involved, not know your names, or think you're dead, because he'll kill you, and then he'll go to work on you.
Danny steps closer.
That's why we had to be very careful, very precise.
Well-funded.
Yeah. You gotta be nuts, too. And you're gonna need a crew as nuts as you are.
Smiling slightly, Reuben's gaze shifts from Rusty to Danny.
Who do you got in mind?
All right, who's in? Frank C. is in. Frank C. has developed a bad case of bronchitis and is putting in for a transfer to warmer climates.
In the backseat of a taxi, Frank grins. He gazes at a sign that reads, "Welcome to fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada."
What about drivers?
I talked to the Malloys yesterday.
The Mormon twins?
They're both in Salt Lake City, 6 months off the job. Got the sense they're having trouble filling the hours.
Now at a rundown raceway, a model monster truck with green flame detailing pulls to a starting line. An identical full-size truck pulls up beside it. Nearby, a goateed man holds a remote control. The bearded driver of the full-size truck looks at him.
Waiting, sweetheart, just waiting.
Good, go.
Waiting for you.
What do you want?
Go, little girl, you're like a little girl.
Relax.
Just do this good? All day. I'm gonna get out of the car and I'm gonna drop you like third period French, okay? Stop talking, go.
The goateed Malloy, Virgil, presses a trigger and the miniature truck starts down the track. His brother, Turk, races up beside it. Virgil laughs from his position at the starting line. His brother turns his wheel and the truck swerves. It runs over the miniature, crushing it. Virgil's smile fades. In the full-size truck, Turk laughs. Now words appear. Los Angeles, California. At a park bench, a man in a business suit sets down his briefcase and joins another man. They anxiously peer over their shoulders. Across the street, three men sit inside a white panel van filled with surveillance equipment.
Electronics?
Livingston Dell. Livingston's been doing freelance surveillance work of late for the FBI mob squad.
How are his nerves?
Okay. Not so bad, you notice.
As an agent reaches for a keyboard, a mousy man waves his hand at him.
Don't touch that.
Why not?
Do you see me grabbing the gun out of your holster and waving it around?
Hey, Radio Shack.
Relax.
The mousy Livingston returns to his notes. Later, as he walks down a path, he gets tangled up in a rollerblader's dog leash. Across the street, Rusty and Danny sit at an outdoor cafe.
Munitions.
Phil Turrentine.
Dead.
No kidding. On the job?
Skin cancer.
He sent flowers?
Dated his wife for a while.
Bashers in town.
There might be an issue with availability.
Now, a man runs a fuse from a vault with a 7-foot diameter down a hall and around a corner past a waiting crew.
All right, chaps.
A lean black man readies a detonator.
Hang on to your knickers.
He presses a button and blasts explode at 6-inch intervals around the vault door circumference. As one of the crew swings the thick door open, casings drop to the floor. The lean man grins as he struts through the smoke to the open vault. He does a graceful spin and steps inside.
I'll leave it out.
He faces his crew.
You tossers! You had one job to do!
Now SWAT team members usher the cuffed robbers out towards squad cars. One faces the lean man.
That's all you use in the event, right? Nothing else?
Hang on. Are you accusing me of booby trapping?
Well, how about it?
Booby traps are Mr. Tarr's style. Isn't that right?
Rusty approaches.
Basher.
He flashes a badge.
Check. ATF. Let me venture a guess. Simple G4 mainliner, back wound, quick fuse, with a drag under 20 feet. Yeah. Let me ask you something else. Did you search this scumbag? Booby traps on his person? I mean, really searched. Not just for weapons. Stand back.
Rusty pushes Basher onto the hood, then faces the cop.
Go find Griggs. Tell him I need to see him.
Who?
Just find him, will ya?
The officer heads off. Basher smiles.
Hey, Basher.
Hey, Rusty.
How fast can you put something together with what I just slipped you?
Stunned.
Rusty escorts the robber away.
Hey, is Danny back?
Yeah, he's waiting around the corner.
Oh, it's terrific. It'll be nice working with proper villains again.
They look back.
Everybody down!
As a police car explodes, Rusty and Basher run.
They weren't expecting it.
Now at a circus, a clown wearing a checkered suit faces a ring and spreads his arms. Words appear, San Diego, California. In the ring, 8 Chinese acrobats cling to 2 vertical poles with their legs. They all hold the poles in one hand and extend their bodies diagonally. In the packed audience, Rusty and Danny watch as the 8 performers move in unison.
Which one's the Amazing Yen?
The little Chinese guy.
Danny's cheerless gaze shifts from the act to Rusty.
Who else is on the list?
He is the list.
Alone in the ring, a small Chinese man scurries to the top of one pole.
I don't know, it doesn't seem all that different.
The acrobat backflips to the other pole, clinging to it with his legs, then flips to the floor and bows. As Rusty sips a soda, Danny's eyes widen.
We got a grease man. We got a grease man.
Later, the masterminds leave the circus tent and head for the convertible. Rusty eats cotton candy.
We need Saul.
He won't do it. Got out of the game a year ago.
Get religion?
Ulcers.
Rusty gets behind the wheel.
You could ask him.
Hey, I could ask him.
Now words appear, St. Petersburg, Florida. At a racetrack, a betting slip pops out of a slot into an old man's fingers. Wearing a bucket hat, pineapple print Hawaiian shirt, and sunglasses, he heads for the track. Outside, Rusty looks up from a racing form and follows him. The old man sits on a bench and peels an orange. Rusty comes up from behind and leans on the back of the bench.
I saw you at the paddock before the second race, outside the men's room when I placed my bet. I saw you before you even got up this morning.
How you been, Saul?
Never better.
What's with the orange?
My doctor says I need vitamins.
So why don't you take vitamins?
You come here to give me a physical?
Box seats, come on.
Now walkers parade numbered greyhounds before the stands. In a box seat, Rusty eats fruit salad from a plastic container as Saul clutches his betting slips.
So you're gonna tell me? Or should I just say no and get it over with?
Saul, you're the best there is. You're in Cooperstown. What do you want?
Nothing. I got a duplex now. I got wall-to-wall and a goldfish. I'm seeing a nice lady who works the unmentionables counter at Macy's. I've changed.
The race starts. Saul fixes his gaze on the track.
Guys like us don't change, Saul. We stay sharp or we get sloppy. We don't change.
Quit conning me.
Is that your hound way in the rear there?
He breaks late. Everyone knows this.
Saul sits back in his seat and shifts his gaze to Rusty.
So you're gonna treat me like a grown-up at least? Tell me what the scam is?
Rusty leans close to Saul and whispers in his ear. He takes out a plane ticket and drops it on Saul's lap. Patting the old man's back, Rusty gives him a smile and leaves his seat. Saul looks up from the ticket, slack-jawed, and lets his betting slips fall to the floor. Grimacing, he puts a hand on his stomach and lifts his gaze. Now, a lounge's TV shows footage of a boxer proudly holding up a heavyweight world champion belt. At the bar, Danny sips a drink, and Rusty watches the fight commercial with his head resting on his folded arms.
Saul makes 10. 10 ought to do it, don't you think?
Rusty stares at the TV.
You think we need one more?
Rusty remains motionless.
You think we need one more?
Danny stares at the TV, too.
All right, we'll get one more.
Now on elevated tracks, trains pass each other through a station. Words appear, Chicago, Illinois. On one crowded train, a boyish man in a red baseball cap stands reading an open book with a pen in his mouth. A man in an overcoat stands beside him reading a newspaper. As the train jostles, the image moves in slow motion. The boyish man bumps into the man with the newspaper, reaches into his overcoat, and removes a wallet. A few seats away, Danny smiles knowingly. As the train stops, the boyish man exits onto the platform, followed by Danny. As Danny brushes past the pickpocket, the image slows again. Later, the boyish man crosses a street. Glancing about furtively, he reaches in his coat pocket. The young man stops and peers toward his pocket with a puzzled gaze. He pulls out an embossed calling card with a hand-printed message. Nice pull, Emmett's Pub. He turns over the card and reads the single line of raised print, Daniel Ocean. The pickpocket turns around and glances down the street. Now a sign on a corner establishment reads Emmett's Pub. As the boyish man enters the near-empty pub, Danny looks up from a table.
Hello, Linus.
Danny shows the wallet.
Whose is this?
Linus stares.
Who are you?
A friend of Bobby Caldwell's.
Danny puts down a plane ticket.
You're either in or you're out. Right now.
Linus eyes Danny, then takes a seat opposite him.
What is it?
It's a plane ticket. A job offer.
Well, you're pretty trusting pretty fast.
Well, Bobby has a lot of faith in you.
Fathers are like that.
Danny cocks his head.
Oh, he didn't tell you. He doesn't want me trading on his name.
If you do this job, he'll be trading on yours. If you don't, we'll find somebody else who won't be quite as good, and you can go back to feeling up stockbrokers. Can you get the check, please?
As Danny looks away, Linus picks up the ticket and reads it.
That's the best lift I've seen you make yet.
Las Vegas, huh?
America's playground.
Linus smiles. Nighttime. Our view passes by the blinking Stratosphere Tower, then glides over the reflective gold panels of Mandalay Bay. Away from the other casinos, a neon sign flashes the word Stardust.
Less conversation, a little more action, please.
As our view soars over the Bellagio, a row of illuminated fountains rise in front of the casino. In fast motion, men and women scurry across an intersection. Now a taxi van drives down a residential street, turns into a gated driveway, and parks. Smoking a cigar, Reuben opens the front door of his estate and knits his brow. Seven of the gathered thieves stand outside his door.
What, did you guys get a group rate or something?
Now at a pool, Yen sits on a diving board and builds a house of cards. At a buffet table, Turk faces Saul.
Saul, do you make it out to Utah much?
Not as often as I'd like.
I think you should check it out. I think you'd dig Provo. I think you could do very well there.
I'll look into it.
Danny approaches.
Gentlemen, welcome to Las Vegas.
Is that right?
Everybody eating? Good. Everybody sober? Close enough. All right, before we get started, nobody's on the line here yet. What I'm about to propose to you is both highly lucrative and highly dangerous. Now, that doesn't seem like your particular brand of vodka. Help yourself as much food as you like and have a safe journey, no hard feelings. Otherwise, come with me.
As Danny heads toward the house, the men follow. Saul grabs an orange from the buffet on his way in. Sitting on a patio chair, Linus lingers behind. Reuben approaches him.
You're Bobby Caldwell's kid, huh? From Chicago?
Yeah.
It's nice there. You like it?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Get in the damn house.
Chewing gum, the young thief gets up. Reuben follows him inside. Now in a den, Danny stands next to a TV screen displaying a three-dimensional map.
Gentlemen, the 3,000 block of Las Vegas Boulevard, otherwise known as the Bellagio, the Mirage, and the MGM Grand. Together, they're three of the most profitable casinos in Las Vegas. Let me see.
Another image appears.
This is the vault at the Bellagio. It's located below the strip, beneath 200 feet of solid earth. It safeguards every dime that passes through each of the three casinos above it. And we're going to rob it.
Smash and grab job, huh?
Slightly more complicated than that.
Oh, yeah.
This is courtesy of Frank Catton, new blackjack dealer at the Bellagio. Okay, bad news first. This place houses a security system that rivals most nuclear missile silos. First, we have to get within the casino cages, which anybody will tell you takes more than a smile. Next, through these doors, each of which requires a different six-digit code changed every 12 hours. Past those lies the elevator. This is where it gets tricky. The elevator won't move without authorized fingerprint identification,
which we can't fake,
and vocal confirmation from both the security system within the Bellagio and the vault below,
which we won't get.
Furthermore, the elevator shaft is rigged with motion detectors,
meaning if we were to manually override the lift, the shaft's exit would lock down automatically and we'd be trapped.
Now, once we get down the shaft, though, then it's a piece of cake. Just two more guards with Uzis and the most elaborate vault door ever conceived by man. Any questions?
No, tunneling's out. Their sensors monitoring the ground 100 yards in every direction. If a groundhog were to nest there, they'd know about it. Anyone else?
You said something about good news?
Yeah. The Nevada Gaming Commission stipulates that a casino must hold in reserve enough cash to cover every chip it plays on its floor. That means, on a weekday, by law, it has to carry anywhere between $60 and $70 million in cash and coin. On the weekend, between $80 and $90 million. On a fight night, like the one 2 weeks from tonight, the night that we're going to rob it, $150 million without breaking a sweat.
Linus's lips part.
Now, there are 11 of us, each with an equal share. You do the math.
Exactly.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Say we get into the cage and through the security doors there and down the elevator we can't move and past the guards with the guns and into the vault we can't open.
Without being seen by the cameras.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, well, say we do all that. We're just supposed to walk out of there with $150 million in cash on us without getting stopped?
Linus, Reuben, and Livingston shift their eyes to Danny. Sitting on a couch, Yen and Basher look to him, too.
Yeah.
A smile fades from Saul's face.
Oh. Okay.
He pops an antacid into his mouth and rests his cheek in his hand. Now in a casino, Linus watches guards wheel a cash cart.
All right, here's how we begin. First task, reconnaissance. I want to know everything that's going on in all three casinos, from the rotation of the dealers to the path of every cash cart. I want to know everything about every guard, every watcher, anyone with a security pass.
This girl, Charmaine.
I want to know where they're from, what their nicknames are, how they take their coffee.
She's a dancer at the Crazy Horse, too.
In a break room, two casino technicians talk. At the next table, Frank records their conversation in crossword boxes.
Most of all, I want you guys to know these casinos. They're built as labyrinths to keep people in. I want you guys to know the quick routes out.
He went through at 1044.
1046. Get a watch that works.
Virgil and Turk watch a worker enter a door with a key card. Outside, Basher walks down the sidewalk carrying traffic cones.
Second task, power. On the night of the fight, we're going to throw the switch on Sin City. Basher, it's your show.
You want broke, blind, or bedlam?
How about all three?
Right, it's done.
He enters a manhole near the Bellagio.
Third task, surveillance. Casino security has an eye and an ear on everything, so we want an eye and an ear on them. Livingston?
Well, it's not the least accessible system I've seen, but it's close. I don't suppose they have a closed circuit feed I could tap into.
No.
Then it's definitely a black bag job. They employ an in-house technician?
Two. One of them's lonely.
Now at a strip club, the technician watches a woman dance in a sheer nurse's uniform. The dancer pets his hair and discreetly takes his key card from his shirt. Outside, Rusty hands the stripper cash for the card.
Thanks, Charmaine. I'll have this back in an hour. Can I have your mom for me?
Say it yourself. She'll be on stage in 5 minutes.
Sucking on a lollipop, Rusty knits his brow. He gets into his convertible beside a dozen red and white helium balloons. Our view zooms in on the balloons, then pulls out on the casino floor. Wearing a tall cowboy hat and glasses, Virgil carries the balloons past rows of slot machines. He bumps into his brother and lets go. The balloons float up to the ceiling and block a security camera.
Watch it, bud.
We going bud, pal.
Who you calling pal, friend?
We going friend, jackass.
Don't call me a jackass.
I just did call you a jackass.
433, we have a visual impairment on the Northwest 052 exit door camera.
Copy that, I see them.
A guard walks away from a closed door. As he leaves, the screen splits, showing Livingston approach in a technician's uniform. Our view follows Livingston to the unmanned door. Using his gloved hands, he inserts a key card into a slot and opens the door. A posted sign reads, "Authorized personnel only." Now in a corridor, Livingston removes his gloves and looks down at a map drawn on his palm. Glancing up, he turns down another corridor. In a surveillance room, an image of the balloons fills one monitor. On another, Livingston walks down the hall. Now Livingston enters an electrical room. He walks down a row of shelving units packed with bundles of wire and stops at one group in the casino.
I'm not in your face.
You are in my face.
You bumped into me. You got in my way. I was trying to deliver my balloons.
Gentlemen.
He's a balloon boy.
Balloon boy. Yeah, balloon boy.
You're spinning on my face.
In the electrical room, Livingston attaches a chip to one of the wires. He takes out a portable monitor and a casino table appears on screen. At another bundle, Livingston separates wires. Images of the back corridor appear on his small screen. In a hotel suite, the images appear on a larger set of monitors.
And we're up and running. Why do they always paint hallways that color?
They say taupe is very soothing.
Livingston exits the electrical room and passes a guard. The guard stops and gives a quizzical look as Livingston continues down the hall. Using his key card, the guard opens the door to the electrical room, back on the casino floor.
I'm gonna need you to move
the balloons
now.
You know what? I'll move the balloons because I have a very important client waiting for these. I don't have time to fool around with you two circus animals.
Virgil walks away with the balloons. In the corridor, Livingston looks at his palm and finds only smeared ink. He remembers using his hand to wipe sweat from his forehead. In the hotel suite, Danny and Rusty watch the monitors. They see Livingston pause at an intersection of corridors. On the monitor, he walks to the right, vanishing from sight. A moment later, he walks back the other way. In the electrical room, the guard scans the rows of wire and furrows his brow. He bends down. Now in the corridor, the guard follows Livingston.
Hey, hold up a minute.
Livingston speeds up.
Excuse me. Hey!
Swiping his card, Livingston tries to leave. The guard shows him the portable monitor.
Drop this.
Oh, thank you.
How's reception on those things?
Excellent.
Take care.
He takes the monitor and heads onto the casino floor. In the hotel suite, Rusty and Danny release sighs.
Well, yeah.
In a warehouse.
First task, construction. We need to build an exact working replica of the Bellagio vault.
For practice.
Something like that.
The men unload boxes.
Fifth task, intelligence.
We need those codes, Linus, from the only guy who has all three. But Benedict? Learn to love his shadow. Wait. All I get to do is watch the guy?
You gotta walk before you can crawl.
First then. Sixth task, transport.
At a car lot, the Malloy brothers bounce on the back of an open white van.
Well, I am sorry, but $18,500 apiece is the best offer that I can make.
Well, I understand. And there are some great looking vans you got out there.
Yes, sir. Top of the line.
Inside, Frank faces the car salesman.
Okay. Thank you for your time, Mr.
Denham. Billy Tim Denham.
Yes, Denham like a jean.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, just like the jean.
Frank shakes his hand and holds on.
Man, you got some lovely hands here. Do you moisturize?
I'm sorry?
I tried all sorts of brand of lotion. I even went fragrance free for a whole year. Now, my sister, she uses aloe vera with a little sunscreen in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And ideally speaking, we all should wear gloves going to bed. But I found out that that would be a little interference in my social agenda, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Plus, I get a reaction from the camphor. So I really don't get into the traditional remedies, you know?
I see, yeah. Let me tell you something. Mm. If you were willing to pay cash,
yeah,
I might be able to drop that down to, say, 16 each.
No.
Yes, sir.
You do that.
Well, yes, sir.
Man, that'd be lovely. They told me to come see you.
Oh, did they? Well, I'm sure glad they did.
Frank releases Denham's red trembling hand.
Let me go get the paperwork. And I'll be right back. You just wait here at the table, okay?
You do that.
Thank you, sir.
Now, at an upscale tailor's, Saul tries on a gray double-breasted suit jacket. As he feels the lapels, Danny and Reuben look on.
This is very nice material.
It's imported silk, Saul.
Yeah. Very nice.
Gentlemen, would you excuse us just for a second?
Thanks. As the tailors leave, Danny gets up from a couch and approaches Saul at the mirror. He rubs his hands together.
Saul, are you sure you're ready to do this?
Saul breathes in. With a hooked brow, he looks at Danny.
If you ever ask me that question again, Daniel, you will not wake up the following morning.
Danny turns around and cocks his head at Reuben. He sits back down on the couch. Saul stares at his reflection.
My name is Lyman. Zerga.
Outside the Bellagio.
My name is Lyman Zerga.
Saul wears the gray suit.
My name is Lyman Zerga.
With a stern face, he adjusts his tie and strolls forward confidently. Following him, the Malloy brothers wear dark suits and carry luggage. As they enter the lobby, they walk under a ceiling decorated with colorful glass sculptures. Virgil and Turk wear dark sunglasses and earpieces. Saul buttons his jacket, then passes a lounge where Linus and Rusty sit at a table.
Okay, tell me about Benedict.
That guy's a machine.
Good afternoon, Mr. Benedict. All right,
he arrives at the Bellagio every day at 2 p.m. Same car, same driver.
Mr. Benedict.
All right, Tommy, how's the baby?
Very well, thank you.
Remembers every valet's name on the way in. Not bad for a guy worth $750 million. Offices are upstairs. He works hard, hits the lobby floor at 7 on the nose.
Good evening, sir. How are you, Frank? How's the family?
Spends 3 minutes on the floor with his casino manager.
What do they talk about?
All business. Benedict likes to know what's going on in his casinos, likes to be in control. There's rarely an incident he doesn't know about or handle personally.
The slick-haired casino owner shakes hands with the well-dressed gambler.
Spends a few minutes glad-handing the high rollers.
Benedict bows to a Japanese man.
He's fluent in Spanish, German, and Italian, and he's taking Japanese lessons. He's getting pretty good at it.
Matane.
He's out by 7:30 when an assistant hands him a black portfolio.
Thank you, Doc.
Contents, the day's take, and new security codes. Then he heads to the restaurant.
Carrying the portfolio, Benedict briskly walks under a clock that reads 7:30. Rusty and Linus watch him.
Like I said, a machine.
That portfolio contains codes to all the kids' doors?
Mm-hmm. And 2 minutes after they've been changed, he's got them in his hand.
Rusty snacks on shrimp cocktail.
I tell you, you guys really can pick them. This guy is as smart as he is ruthless. The last guy they caught cheating in here, he not only sent him up for 10 years, but he had the bank seize his house, and then he bankrupted his
brother-in-law's tractor dealership, I heard.
He doesn't just take out your knees. Mm-hmm. The guy goes after your livelihood and the livelihood of anybody you ever met.
You scared?
You suicidal?
Rusty grins.
Only in the morning. Now what?
Now comes a girl. She comes down after him if they're in a snit.
Where'd she come from?
Museum up there. She's a curator.
Linus looks toward a staircase.
Here she is.
Rusty looks up from his shrimp cocktail.
This is just the best part of my day.
Wearing a scarlet skirt suit that highlights the contours of her slender figure, a woman with red hair descends the stairs. With an assertive stride, the full-lipped woman passes Linus and Rusty, who keeps his back to her.
I still don't know if we can use her yet. Actually, I haven't even caught her name.
Tess.
Rusty looks down.
Huh?
Her name is Tess.
Rusty holds his lips tight. Now Frank loads rows of black chips into a windowed shelving unit. Behind him, Saul wheels a cart of bundled cash blocks into a replica of the Bellagio vault. He unloads another shelving unit while Livingston pushes a cart with monitors and tools. Watching, Danny places a few chips in his inside jacket pocket. Rusty approaches him.
We have to talk.
Okay.
Now.
Rusty ushers Danny to the open warehouse door.
Tell me this is not about her, or I am walking. I am walking off this job right now. Tess. Terry Benedict. Tell me this is not about screwing the guy who's screwing your wife.
Ex-wife.
Tell me.
It's not about that.
Danny paces.
It's not entirely about that.
Rusty, you remember when we first got into this business? We said we were going to play the game like we had nothing to lose.
Well, I lost something. I lost someone. That's why I'm here.
Raising his brow, Rusty looks back into the warehouse, then rubs his chin.
Okay, here's the problem. Now we're stealing two things. And when push comes to shove, if you can't have both, what you gonna choose? And remember, Tess does not split 11 ways.
If everything goes to plan, then I won't be the one that has to make that choice.
Rusty eyes his friend, then looks away and folds his arms.
How'd she look?
She looked good.
Thanks.
Danny smiles and nods. Now in the Bellagio Museum, Tess stands motionless with her eyes fixed forward. A bald man next to her talks and gestures with his hands. Hanging on a wall opposite them, a cubist-style painting displays an abstract design. Tess and her two companions turn their heads as Benedict enters the museum. Tess introduces a man in a suit to him. The casino owner studies the painting closely, wearing an open beige jacket with a mandarin collar. Later, he and Tess face the painting alone.
You like it?
Benedict looks at her.
I like that you like it.
Tess smiles at him, and he returns the warm gaze.
I'll see you tonight.
As Tess draws close, he rolls his eyes upward. She steps back and looks up at a dome security camera on the ceiling.
In my hotel, there's always somebody watching. I'll see you tonight.
With his hands folded behind his back, Benedict walks away, leaving Tess alone. Now Saul sits at a gaming table and chews an antacid.
A weak stomach, Mr. Zerga?
I don't believe in weakness. It costs too much. I don't believe in questions either.
Oh, really? Well, then let me give you a tip. I wouldn't get into Terry Benedict for too much money. He doesn't fool around.
Saul sees Benedict approach the pit boss.
Anything for me?
Mr. Zerga, Lyman Zerga in the third position. Wants to speak to you privately.
Who is he?
Businessman of some kind, working mostly in Europe. Very vague, but I asked around. Word is he does primarily in arms. One of the biggest.
Zerga.
Yes, sir.
Never heard of him.
So I don't doubt it.
He's staying here?
Checked in two nights ago. He's in the Marriott suite.
How's he doing?
Up. Almost 200.
Good for him.
Benedict enters the room. Now in an elegant restaurant, a vase with several cut roses rests on a candlelit table. Sitting alone, Tess takes a sip of wine. As she somberly looks down, a man in a suit touches her shoulder. Tess smiles.
You're 30 seconds late. I was about to send out a search.
Tess turns around and finds Danny.
Hello, Tess.
What are you doing here?
I'm out.
You're out?
The prison. You remember the day that I went for cigarettes and didn't come back? You must have noticed.
I don't smoke. Don't sit.
He sits.
Now, they tell me that I paid my debt to society.
Funny, I never got a check.
Danny smiles.
You're not wearing your ring.
I sold it. I don't have a husband, or didn't you get the papers?
My last day inside.
I told you I'd write.
As she eyes him coldly, Danny swallows.
Danny, go now before...
What? Benedict?
He turns his head.
How you doing? Whiskey and whiskey.
Danny.
Tess, you're doing a great job curating the museum. The Vermeer is quite good. It's simple, vibrant. Although his work definitely fell off as he got older.
Remind you of anyone?
And I always confuse Monet and Manet. Now, which one married his mistress?
Monet.
Right, and then Manet had syphilis.
They also paint it occasionally.
Gazing at her, he holds a tight smile.
All right, I'll make this quick. I came here for you. When I get on with my life, I want you with me.
You're a thief and a liar.
I only lied about being a thief. I don't do that anymore.
Steal?
Lie.
I'm with someone now who doesn't have to make that kind of distinction.
No, he's very clear on both.
Tess glares at him.
You know what your problem is?
I only have one.
You've met too many people like you. I'm with Terry now.
Danny nods slightly, keeping his gaze fixed on Tess.
Does he make you laugh?
He doesn't make me cry.
Tess's somber eyes connect with Danny's. He nods, then bows his head. Our view looks in on them through a window as they avert their gazes. Now Saul faces Benedict.
Mr. Benedict, the fight is Saturday night, is it not?
Yes. Would you like some tickets?
No. Hand-to-hand combat does not interest me. I have a package arriving here that evening. A black briefcase, standard size, the contents of which is very valuable to me.
I'll put it in the house safe for you.
The house safe is for Brandy and Grandmother's pearls. I need something more secure.
Mr. Zerga, I can assure you that our house safe is...
And I can assure you, Mr. Benedict, that your generosity in this manner will not go overlooked. Now, what can you offer me besides the safe?
Back in the restaurant.
See, the people you steal things from, they have insurance to compensate them. They get made whole again. I had to leave New York to get away from what happened. How am I going to get my 5 years back, Danny?
You can't. But what you can do is not throw away another
five. You don't
know
anything.
All right, you don't love me anymore. You want to make a life with someone else? Fine. I'm going to have to live with that. But not him.
Spoken like a true ex-husband.
I'm not joking, Tess.
I'm not laughing, Danny. You have to admit there is a bit of a conflict of interest when you give me advice about my love life.
Yes, but that doesn't mean that I'm wrong.
He stares at her with a lifted brow.
Do you remember what I said to you when we first met?
He drops his gaze.
You said that I better know what I'm doing.
Do you? Now? Yeah? Because truly, you should walk out the door if you don't.
I know what I'm doing.
What are you doing?
Benedict approaches the table.
Just catching up.
Terry, meet my ex-husband.
Danny Ocean.
Mr. Ocean?
I'm in your seat.
Danny gets up.
Forgive me for being late. A guest required my attention.
That's fine. Danny was walking through the restaurant and spotted me.
Is that right?
Yeah, imagine the odds.
Of all the gin joints in all the world. You recently were released from prison, is that correct?
That's right.
How does it feel to be out?
About the same.
Danny fiddles with the wedding band on his finger.
Danny was just about
to... I just stopped by to say hi to Tess for old time's sake.
Stay and have a drink.
You can't.
As Danny grins at Tess, Benedict's eyes shift. Tess looks down.
Well then. I don't imagine we'll be seeing Mr. Ocean anytime soon, right?
You never know.
I know everything that's happening in my hotels.
So I should put those towels back?
No, the towels you can keep.
Benedict kisses Tess's hand and she smiles. Danny rubs his palms together.
Good to see Tess.
Take care, Danny.
Terry.
Danny.
Danny walks away from the couple. Now, as he climbs up an escalator, Linus leans against a nearby railing. He waits for Danny to step off. With his hands in his pockets, Linus follows his associate along a crowded row of stores. Now in the hotel suite, a case full of small chemical containers and tools rests near a box labeled explosive. Basher sits in front of a square coffee table with an open black briefcase and scattered supplies. Wearing gloves, he carves a green gemstone. Now outside, a crowd and news vans surround a stage. Along with several others, Benedict, Reuben, and Tess step up to the platform. The facade of a temple gate towers behind them. As they applaud for a speaker, Tess looks out at the crowd. In the audience, Danny stares at her through dark glasses. A few people behind, Linus keeps his eyes on Danny. On stage, Benedict looks to two men. Together, they grip the bar on a detonator. As the crowd turns around, Danny and Linus remain facing forward. The men push the detonator handle down. In the hotel suite, Basher watches a multi-story casino crumble to the ground on TV. Behind him, the structure falls right outside his window. Suddenly, the lights and TV flicker and go out. Basher looks around. Later, he places a privacy tag on the doorknob and leaves. At Rubin's estate, the team meets around a model of the vault.
Tomorrow day is yours. Do with it what you like. Call us at 5:30. Makeup and costume. Saul's package arrives at 7:05. Linus grabs our codes. All goes well, we're a go. 7:30, Yen gets locked in, we're committed. From this point, we have 30 minutes to blow the power before he suffocates.
Now in a vault, a guard pushes a cash card into place. It forms a square in the center of the room with three others. As the guard leaves, two heavy doors slide together. Thin green laser sensors glow a few inches off the ground.
Once the electricity goes, all access points to the vault and its elevator will automatically shut down for 2 minutes. That's when we make our move.
Yen climbs out of the cash cart. Our view expands, revealing the warehouse.
Okay. They put you in the middle of the room, 10 feet from everything. You have to get from there to the door without touching the floor. What do you do?
10 says he shorts it.
20.
Yen backflips off the cart and lands on a shelf.
Yeah, we're in deep six. That poxy demo crew haven't used the coaxial inch to back the main line, have they? They've only nosed up the mainframe couplet, nosed it right up.
Do you understand any of this?
I'll explain later.
Listen, they're so pony that they've gone and blown a backup grid one by one, like dominoes.
Basher, what happened?
They did the same what I would have done, only they did it by accident. Problem is now they know their weakness and they're sorting it out. They're fixing it.
So
unless we intend to do this job in Reno, we're in Barney.
They all stare quizzically at Basher.
Barney Rubble. Trouble!
Danny leans toward Rusty.
Well, we could always...
By tomorrow?
Rusty shakes his head.
But hang on a minute, hang on. We could use a pinch.
Rusty shrugs and Danny frowns.
What's a pinch?
A pinch is a device which creates like a cardiac arrest for any broadband electrical circuitry. Or better yet, a pinch is a bomb. No, but without the bomb. See, when a nuclear weapon detonates, it unleashes an electromagnetic pulse which shuts down any power source within its blast radius. Now, that tends not to matter in most cases because a nuclear weapon usually destroys everything you might need power for anyway. But see, a pinch creates a similar electromagnetic pulse, but without the fuss of mass destruction and death. So instead of Hiroshima, you'd be getting the 17th century.
How long?
About 30 seconds.
Could a pinch knock out the power of an entire city? Like, for instance...
Las Vegas?
Basher grins and nods thoughtfully.
Yeah, I think it might. No, but there's only one pinch in the world big enough to manage it.
Where?
Basher's lips twist into a lopsided smile. Now a sign reads California Institute of Advanced Science. A white van passes and parks by an entrance. The rear door opens and Danny, Basher, and Yen get out.
Go. Basher, come on.
Linus starts to follow.
There you go.
No, leave me with these guys!
As Danny and his team run to a side door and break in, Linus watches through the rear window. The Malloy brothers sit in the front seat.
All right, start.
Okay, go ahead, I got one.
Are you going to think of one?
Okay. No, I've already thought of one. I'm not going to
think of one. All right, so you're thinking of one right now.
No, I'm done thinking about it. I have it in my head.
Are you a man?
Yes, 19.
Are you alive?
Yes, 18.
Evil Knievel.
Shoot!
In back, Linus sits motionless.
I'm not touching you.
Take your hand out like this.
My hand's not in your
hand.
Am I touching you?
Your hand's right in front of
me. I'm not touching you.
I
didn't touch you.
You just touched me.
No, I didn't.
You just made me touch you.
No. This is your side.
Linus bows his head and covers his ears.
Get off.
Linus jumps out of the van and pulls something from his back pocket. As he heads through the building's entrance, Basher, Yen, and Danny emerge from a pair of maintenance doors nearby. They wheel over an electronic chest-high device. A thick horizontal glass tube stretches between two wired discs. Inside the tube, greenish fluid surrounds a coil. They load it into the back of the van. Later, they drive off, headlights shining.
All right, I'm gonna need a scorecard batteries, along and a couple wires. What?
Where's Linus?
The van lurches to a stop and the side door slides open. The crew scans the building. Behind a series of windows, a shadowy figure races up a staircase.
There he is.
Oh, would you look at his donut?
On the other end of the building, two security guards hurry up another staircase. Everyone shoots Yen a confused glance, then looks back at the building.
Shouldn't somebody help him?
Oh, no, that's a great idea, Albert. Let's hop out the van and we can all get nicked.
On the second floor, an object smashes through a window. Linus climbs out through the blinds.
Back it up.
As Danny slides the door closed, Linus jumps out onto a grated awning. The young pickpocket carefully makes his way across, stepping on metal crossbeams. As the van speeds over in reverse, the security guards head out through the broken window. Linus jumps onto the van's roof.
Let him in.
As Yen and Basher open the back doors, Linus rolls down the windshield. He heads around to the side door. As the van speeds off, one of the back doors swings shut on Yen's hand.
Say, stay in the van, you stay in the van. You got it. Lose focus in this game for one second.
I got it. Somebody gets hurt. I got it.
Better. Daytime in the hotel suite.
Where are they? That's what I want to know. Where the hell are they?
They will be here.
They will be here.
Spuck.
Now the white van pulls up outside the lobby. Danny and Linus climb out. Inside, Rusty eats ice cream as he watches them.
You boys have a nice trip?
In an elevator, he wipes his hands with a paper napkin. Frowning, Danny and Linus avoid his gaze. Now the doors open. As the three enter the suite, Livingston greets them.
We have a problem.
The image flips to later.
You've been red flagged. It means the moment you set foot in that casino floor, they'll be watching you. Like hawks. Hawks with video cameras.
Danny reads a printout with his mugshots on it.
That's a problem.
So I'll turn that off, will you?
I'll turn it off when I'm ready to turn
Saul!
It
off.
Saul! It's off!
Saul clicks a remote, then gets up.
Any idea how this happened?
Danny arches his eyebrows.
No.
Oh, come on. He's been chasing Benedict's girl. The two of them got in an argument two nights ago.
Danny and Linus stare at each other.
I was tailing you.
And who told you to do that?
I did. I was concerned you couldn't leave Tess alone.
Who's Tess?
My wife.
Ex-wife.
Tess is here?
I'm sorry. I didn't know if it would sting you, but it did.
Rusty shakes his head.
You're out, Danny.
He's out?
It's either that or we call the whole thing off. His involvement puts us all at risk.
This is not your call.
Oh, you made it my call. When you put her before us, you made it mine.
This is my job.
Not anymore.
Wait. He can't just be out. Who's gonna trigger the vault?
Kid, you up for it?
He looks over his shoulder at Linus, who leans against a wall. Danny clenches his jaw.
I can do it.
Done. Locate the others, let them know the change in plan. Curtain goes up at 7.
Tess is with Benedict now? She's too tall for him.
Now a view through a doorway shows a bedroom.
Yes. No. Very much no.
Golf balls roll toward a metal cup lying on its side.
Well, then inform Mr. Levin that he'll be better off watching the fight in front of his television at home. Surely he must have HBO. That's it.
Benedict tosses his phone onto the bed, then enters a bathroom. Tess sits at a mirror.
Hi.
Smiling, she rubs her hands as she looks at his reflection.
What are you thinking about?
You.
As she looks down, her smile fades slightly.
Where are you going to put your hands?
In the hotel suite, Linus grips a briefcase with both hands.
No good. Don't touch your tie. Look at me. Okay. I ask you a question. You have to think of the answer. Where do you look?
Linus lowers his head.
No good. You look down, they know you're lying. And up, they know you don't know the truth. Don't use 7 words when 4 will do. Don't shift your weight. Look always at your mark, but don't stare. Be specific, but not memorable. Be funny, but don't make him laugh. He's got to like you and then forget you the moment you've left his sight. And for God's sake, whatever you do, don't under any circumstance.
Rust.
Yeah.
Can you take a look at this?
Sure.
Linus gapes as Rusty heads past him. Now in a bedroom, Saul ties the laces on his black leather shoes, then starts to rise. He falters, then drops back down and holds his forehead. Rusty appears in the doorway holding a mug.
Saul?
The old man runs his fingers over his bald crown.
It's time.
Saul nods. Yeah. Grabbing his suit jacket, he gets up. Rusty leaves. Saul puts on his jacket and looks in a mirror. He straightens his tie, then nods.
Okay. Let's do it.
Outside the MGM Grand, a jumbo screen shows boxers.
On a perfectly clear night in Las Vegas, and with the expected crowd of celebrities and eager sports fans piling into the MGM Grand Garden Arena, the two best heavyweights in the world prepare to meet after an eight-month dance around and toward each other.
In the lobby of the Bellagio, Benedict approaches Saul.
Zerga?
Mr. Benedict.
It's a very busy night for me. Are we on schedule?
I have no reason to suspect otherwise. My courier should be here momentarily.
Outside, a black car pulls up underneath the resort's front awning. Now a man in a black suit exits, carrying a black briefcase handcuffed to his wrist. He approaches Saul and Benedict. Another man unlocks the handcuff.
Ish. Baba Slobolo.
Zorozhi.
Kivadosh.
He moves the handcuff to Saul's wrist, now at a blackjack table.
18. Blackjack.
Dealing cards, Frank watches Saul, Benedict, the Malloy brothers, and two tall tuxedoed men approach. The casino owner spots Danny sitting at a video poker machine. Puffing on a cigar, Benedict glances at one of the tuxedoed men.
Find Mr. Wall selling Mr. Oceans in the West slots.
The man splits off from the others.
I'm afraid I can't have any private security personnel in the casino cages. I hope you don't mind.
Of course not. How clear blue you was.
Saul! Saul Bloom, is that you? Saul! Saul, it's me! Bucky Buchanan! Remember? From Saratoga!
As the Malloy brothers detain the man, he removes his thick-tinted glasses.
Mikhail, Vladimir.
They drag Bucky away.
Hey, Saul! Saul! Hey!
Saul raises his briefcase.
Mr. Benedict, please. I have never enjoyed the touch of steel to my skin.
Benedict puts his cigar back in his mouth. Later, Saul opens his briefcase, revealing four large green gems in red velvet padding.
Lift them up, please.
The old con man removes the padding. Our view looks into a counting room through a window as Benedict runs his fingers along the briefcase's lining.
All right, Mrs. Zerga, I acknowledge that your briefcase does not contain any dangerous or illicit material, and I further agree to take custody of said briefcase and store it in my secured vault for a period of 24 hours now. I cannot actually allow you to accompany the briefcase into the vault.
Why not?
Insurance for one, security another, but most of all, I just don't trust you.
Saul smirks.
Excuse me.
The gray-haired tuxedo casino manager enters and approaches Benedict. Saul listens.
Put your plain clothes on Ocean. He's in the casino bar now.
Mr. Zerga, this is my casino manager, Mr. Walsh. Now, if you will allow him, he will arrange for your briefcase to be stored inside our vault while you watch on a security monitor. Those are my terms, yes or no?
You leave me no choice.
Good.
The old con man unlocks his handcuff. Now in the warehouse. A view through a truck's windshield shows Basher making an adjustment to the pinch. He puts down his wrench, then slides the device into the back of the white van with the help of the Malloy brothers. As they close the rear doors, our focus shifts to a dangling Royal Pine car freshener. Later, a retracting metal door slides up, revealing the Malloy brothers wearing white uniforms, gloves, and aprons. They push a cloth-covered room service cart down a maintenance ramp and through a food storage room. Now they wheel the cart up a hotel's ramped corridor, then down a narrow hallway. In the lobby, Linus wears glasses, a suit, and trench coat. Lowering his gaze for a moment, he nervously taps a leather badge holder against the corner of a counter.
Deep breaths. You'll do fine.
Thank you.
No sweat. You're a natural. But don't screw up.
Linus looks at the ceiling. In the suite, Livingston and Rusty watch him on the monitors. The Malloy brothers wheel in the room service cart.
Here's the penny.
The brothers remove the food items. Rusty pulls off the cloth covering, revealing the cash cart.
You ready?
Yen nods as he wraps gauze around his hand elsewhere.
This is our security center, where we oversee all gaming in the casino as well as our vault. You'll be able to monitor your briefcase right from here.
He checks his watch.
Don't let me keep you.
Mrs. Zerga?
Mr. Benedict.
The casino owner shoves open a glass door and exits. Back in the suite, Rusty leans toward a microphone.
Linus, you're up.
Now Benedict arrives in the lobby.
Got him.
Quite done.
Mr. Benedict. Hi, Sheldon Willis. Nevada Gaming Commission. I'm afraid I need 2 minutes of your time.
Linus walks alongside the casino owner.
Anything for the NGC.
Thank you. Will you accompany me to Pit 5, please?
As they head around a corner, our view pans rapidly to Danny watching from across the casino. He looks to the side and sees Tess walk by, wearing a coat over a shimmering gown. Danny sips a drink, then walks off, buttoning up his tuxedo shirt. A pair of burly twins get up from the bar and follow, back in the suite.
Hey, when do you make the deposit?
When we get your signal.
Dude, what do we look like? A couple of Peckerwood jackasses or something?
He unfolds himself into the cash cart.
Amazing. How's that feel? You all right? You want something to read? Magazine?
The acrobat's fist pops up.
All right. Counting down. 30 minutes of breathing time starts.
He closes the lid
now.
In the casino.
This just came to our attention this morning, Mr. Benedict. Apparently he's got a record longer than mine.
They watch Frank.
It's long.
Benedict sizes up Linus, then opens his black portfolio.
If he is who you say he is.
He takes out a business card-sized envelope and slips it into his breast pocket.
You've been at the commission long?
Yeah, about 18 months.
You know how Lindley over there worked with him at all?
He watches Linus closely.
Not since he died last year.
The young thief keeps his eyes on Frank as a tuxedoed pit boss brings him over.
Ramon Escalante?
Yes.
Sheldon Willis, Nevada Gaming Commission.
He flashes the badge.
What's going on, man?
It's come to our attention that when you apply for
this position,
you
I think it'll be better if you speak off the floor. Charlie?
As Benedict, Frank, and Linus walk off, our view pushes in on a pair of elevator doors. They slide open and the Malloy brothers emerge, wearing red blazers. They push the cash cart, leaving behind their white uniforms and room service items on the elevator floor. The doors close. Now Danny arrives in the elegant restaurant as a host seats Tess at her table. Spotting her ex-husband, she gets back up.
No, Danny. Yes. No, I want you out of here.
One moment.
No, I've had it with this.
Tess, come here.
Hey.
You are up to something, Danny. What? And don't say you came here for me. You're pulling a job, aren't you? Well, know this. No matter what it is, you won't win me back.
Tess, I just came to say goodbye.
Standing face to face with him, she straightens and takes a breath. As Danny smiles, Tess's mouth opens, then closes.
Goodbye.
He nods. Tess stands firm as he moves closer, touching her waist. He looks her face up and down. His lips inch toward hers. He pauses, then kisses her cheek.
You'll be good.
As he leaves, Tess stands frozen. Straightening his cuffs, Danny approaches the restaurant's entrance. The burly goateed twins stand in his way.
Mr. Ocean, Mr. Benedict would like to see you.
I thought he might.
In a conference room.
Afternoon, Mr. Escalante. Should I call you Mr. Catton?
Frank leans back in a chair.
You are Frank Catton, formerly of the Tropicana, the Desert Inn, and the New York State Penitentiary System. Are you not?
Benedict stands near the closed door. Linus shrugs.
Take it from your silence that you're not going to refute that.
He hands Benedict a file.
Mr. Benedict, I'm afraid you've been employing an ex-convict. And as you know, the NGC's
damn over. Cracker.
Linus faces Frank.
Excuse me?
You heard what I said. Black man can't earn a decent wage in this state.
That is absolutely inappropriate.
Like you gonna try to throw me
sir.
Out on the street?
No one's throwing. I'm trying to do my job,
yeah,
sir.
Do your job. What you want from me, man? Want me to get on the table and dance? You like me to shine your shoes? Want me to smile at you? But you definitely won't let me deal the cars. You might as well call it White Jack.
He waves his hand angrily.
Bingo.
What to say to that? That's sorry, Mr. Man. I just resent the implication that race has anything to do with this.
Yeah, right.
Horrible thing to say.
Linus faces Benedict.
You, sir, of all people know that we at the NGC have always supported the hiring of colored...
Frank springs up from his seat. As Linus flees, his hand sweeps inside Benedict's jacket.
Sit down. You better talk to him.
In the suite.
He's got it.
Sit down. Sorry.
Virgil, Turk, deliver the package.
I'm sorry.
In the casino, the red-jacketed Malloy brothers wear wired earpieces as they wheel the cash cart to the security door. A man in an identical uniform stands guard.
Hey.
Hi. Where's your card?
Oh, God, I think I lost my card.
Are you serious?
I'm so stupid.
You are so,
I'm
so stupid. You know that? You're
hey,
a nymphomaniac.
Guys. Guys. To call someone
hey,
names is already
hey,
serious.
Don't
be upset.
Hey,
what's the matter with you? It's always...
Hey,
keep it down.
Sorry.
Hey,
sorry.
Just tell me, where did this go?
High roller's room. This is Mr. Benedict's stuff in here. It's his stuff.
All right, Joe. Take this inside.
To that room?
No, to the vault. Benedict's money goes into the vault, you know that. Hey, next time, just remember the card. We won't run into this again.
Sorry. Thanks.
Stupid. Jeez.
Now a monitor shows the burly twins escorting Danny down a hall. Another shows a man carrying Saul's briefcase into an elevator.
Yo, hold up.
A guard wheels in the cash cart.
There's your briefcase now, Mr. Zerga.
What? Wonderful.
Saul puts an antacid in his mouth. Back in the suite, Rusty puts on a tie.
That's my cue.
Livingston nods.
Give Bash the go.
The technician picks up the mic.
Bash, what's your status?
In the van.
Bash! Easy, easy. No need to shout, Governor.
What's your status?
Yeah, I'm nearly there.
He lowers a hand radio. Now the white van pulls onto the roof of a parking structure near the Paris Hotel and Casino. As it pulls into a parking space, its headlights go dark. Back in the Bellagio, Walsh waits in a corridor as Frank, Linus, and Benedict exit the conference room.
So Walsh, show this man off the premises.
He glares at Frank.
Don't ever set foot in my casino again.
Sir?
The dealer half lunges at Linus.
Crap!
Oh, dear God.
He cowers. As Frank and Walsh head off, Linus follows Benedict around a corner.
Oh, I forgot my pager. I left it. Sorry.
The casino owner checks his watch.
You know your way back?
I do.
Good.
He walks off.
Okay, enjoy the fight.
Linus heads the other way.
Sorry.
Rounding the corner, he eyes Benedict's business card-sized envelope in his palm, now in a storage room.
How much longer you figure Mr. Benedict's gonna be?
Sitting on a cabinet, Danny checks his watch. The twins stand before him. His gaze scans upward. He arcs his index finger toward the ceiling.
No cameras in this room, huh?
He nods to himself.
Yeah. Don't want anybody seeing what goes on in here.
Smiling, he folds his hands at his waist. His expression sobers.
He's not coming, is he?
A frosted glass door sits closed. One of the twins answers it. A hulking man with a shaved head and tattooed forearm steps inside. His t-shirt shows a snarling tiger.
We're gonna step outside now. Leave you two alone to talk things over.
Elsewhere, a curved metal door slides open, revealing the employees with the cash card and black briefcase. One touches his thumb to a scanner. A display flashes a name and ID number, then reads scan accepted. Now two heavy metal doors part.
1 p.m. Expected at 11 a.m., so needless to say.
One of the guards wheels the cash card into place, and the other sets the briefcase on top, back in the suite.
Oh, shit.
In the security room, a monitor shows the guards exit the vault.
There, does that satisfy you, Mr. Zerga?
I am very satisfied.
Sweating profusely, he loosens his tie.
Are you all right, sir?
I'm fine.
In the storage room.
All right.
The tattooed man punches Danny in the face.
Jeez!
Danny pounds the cabinet.
Bruiser, not until later. Sorry, Danny, I forgot.
It's all right.
He pats the back of Bruiser's neck.
How's your wife?
Pregnant again.
Well, that happens. Let's get started.
He wheels the cabinet to a corner. Bruiser helps him climb on top. Danny removes a ceiling vent. Now in an arena, Ruben chomps on a cigar a few rows behind Tess and Benedict. Security officials lead a Roman-nosed fighter and his entourage down an aisle to the boxing ring. In the front row, Tess and Benedict stand and applaud. Now Linus touches his wireless earpiece as he crosses a security corridor. Back in the suite, Livingston watches him on a monitor.
Almost there, Linus.
In the security room.
Who's that guy?
Saul sways.
8:31, I got a bogey in West Court.
Saul grabs a railing.
Mr. Zerga.
Now Linus enters an elevator. Back in the security room.
Call a doctor!
Walsh kneels over Saul's body. Back in the suite.
Going to video? Matt.
The eye in the sky ASAP. We have a man down and he appears to be unconscious.
A security monitor shows the elevator. The image blinks. Linus disappears. Now in the elevator, Linus puts down his briefcase and opens a ceiling hatch. Danny peers down at him.
Oh!
He recoils into a corner.
Now you really didn't think I was going to sit this one out, did you?
What, you didn't trust me?
I do now.
Linus hands him the briefcase. Danny pulls him up through the hatch. Back in the arena, a broad-shouldered boxer makes his way to the ring. Behind him, members of his entourage hold up two championship belts. As he climbs into the ring, Tess and Benedict applaud in the front row. Meanwhile, a man carrying a doctor's satchel approaches the guarded door to the security wing. It's Rusty in a dark wig and glasses.
Someone call for a doctor?
Elsewhere, Danny and Linus open the briefcase and remove a panel of official-looking documents. Underneath is a toolkit. Each thief grabs a retractable cord.
How'd you get here?
If you give a friend a couple million.
Yeah, but what about Rusty, the whole argument? I mean, what was that about? Oh, come on. You know, why don't you just tell me? Why did you put me through all this?
Where's the fun in that?
All right, let's get going.
In the security room.
Come on, man. Breathe! Breathe, damn it! Breathe!
As Rusty administers CPR to Saul, Turk and Virgil wheel over a gurney. The fake doctor wipes his face.
I'm sorry.
He takes off his glasses.
We've lost him.
Dude, I told you to hurry.
Don't do that. Just don't do that.
I didn't tell you to hurry.
Now the twins wait outside the storage room.
Get up! Get up!
Inside, Bruiser punches his palm, bangs into a cart, and covers his mouth. Back in the corridor.
Yet?
Now red sensor beams crisscross the elevator shaft. Our view tilts up to Linus and Danny, who hang below the stopped elevator. Wearing sleek black outfits, they suction cup their retractable cords onto metal beams. As Linus turns a triangular dial, red lights shine on each of the corners. He extends his cord and latches it to his waist. Danny does the same.
These things are gonna hold us, right?
Should.
He lets go of a beam and sways on his cord. Linus tries out his line. Their feet dangle over the pit of crisscrossing laser beams. Danny touches his ear with a black-gloved hand.
Livingston, we're set.
With Rusty.
Livingston, we're set.
Basher, we're set.
Hang on a minute, Chief.
We don't have a minute. Yen's gonna suffocate.
But then you better leave off bothering me, don't you think?
Basher pockets his walkie-talkie and slides the glowing green pinch into the back of the van. Inside the liquid-filled device, bubbles rise around the glowing spiral core. Meanwhile, in the arena, a referee steps away from the center of the ring and the two fighters face off. As they step lightly around each other, trying small jabs, Benedict applauds beside Tess. Back on the parking structure roof, Basher stands a few yards from the van's open doors. Inside, the pinch glows brightly. Holding a pen-shaped remote in one hand, he slowly covers his crotch with the other. Basher nervously hunches his shoulders and winces as he firmly presses the remote. The pinch's glow flickers slightly and Basher cowers. A quick flash blows the van's roof off. The entire Las Vegas Strip and its surrounding areas go completely dark. Blackness suddenly fills the boxing arena. All the lights and slot machines in the casino shut off. In the dark elevator shaft, Danny faces Linus.
All right, crack them.
They each grab a handful of glow sticks, activate them, and let them drop. As they land on the floor, their green glow illuminates the shaft. Danny nods.
Go.
The two thieves rapidly descend. Their cords pull taut and jerk the men to a stop. They dangle several feet from the floor.
Cut it.
They each use a small knife to cut the wires above their heads. As they fall to the floor, the red sensor beams reactivate above them. As the lights come back on in the arena, the fighters charge each other. The referee gets between them. Tess flinches as each boxer's training staff climbs into the ring and joins the brawl. In the casino, gamblers snatch chips from a table. One punches a dealer. In the security room, men watching the monitors talk into headsets.
30 to 10:33, pit 6, table 5, dealers compromised.
Back in the chaotic casino, a guy trying to escape clotheslines a cocktail waitress. In the arena, officers try to break up the fight in the ring. Benedict blocks a man from backing into Tess. As Tess takes her silver trench coat from her chair, Benedict ushers her away. Meanwhile, in the vault, the lid to Yen's cart lifts slightly and he sets aside a small air tank. As he lifts the lid higher, the briefcase on top starts to slide off. Yen catches the handcuff chain and stops the briefcase's fall just before it touches a green laser sensor a few inches from the floor. Now in the hall, an elevator door slides open and Danny and Linus peek out. They spot two guards standing outside the vault doors with their backs to them. Danny slides a silver disc the size of a hockey puck toward the guards. It stops a few inches from their feet and its top pops up. In the elevator shaft, Danny checks his watch. Danny stops Linus from opening the door. They slide the elevator doors back open. The guards lie unconscious on the ground. Danny and Linus climb out.
You think Yen made it out okay?
I'm sure he'll be fine.
Meanwhile, Frank joins Livingston.
How we doing?
Okay. Yes.
Back in the hall, Danny and Linus bind the guards' hands and feet with plastic zip ties. Linus enters the security code on a panel, and the curved door rotates open, revealing a second door. Linus and Danny enter the small, round antechamber.
95-pound Chinese man with $160 million behind this door.
Let's get him out.
Yeah.
Danny slaps his hand against the door. In the vault, Yen removes the last green gem from the briefcase. As he steadies himself for the backflip, Livingston and Frank watch on the monitor.
10 cents, he shorts it.
No bet.
Try him again.
In the vault, Yen does a graceful backflip high in the air. His butt briefly lands on the top of a shelving unit, but his momentum carries him all the way over. He clings to the edge, his feet just above the sensors. Livingston and Frank trade a worried look. Meanwhile, Yen climbs along the wall and positions himself next to the door. He attaches one of the green gems to the wall, then adds a small disc with an antenna to it. On the other side of the door, Danny listens. Danny attaches two more discs with antennas to his side of the door. As Livingston and Frank watch, Basher arrives in the suite.
Hey, where we at, boys? Pins and floor sensors now. Blonde.
Yen attaches another gem and disc and knocks on the door. Danny lets out a breath.
Here we go.
Danny places a triangular device at the center of the door. Inside, Yen tries to move away. His bandaged hand gets stuck in a nook in the wall.
Counting down from 20. Now.
As Yen struggles to free his hand, Livingston talks into a microphone.
Do not blow the door. Linus, can you read me?
10. 9. 8.
Maybe the pinch blew out his airway. Linus, can you read me? Do not blow the door.
Yen squeezes his eyes shut.
2. 1.
Danny presses the button on a remote detonator. Nothing happens. He taps it a few more times, shakes the remote, then slaps it against his palm.
Something.
Yen looks around anxiously, then lets out a deep breath. He carefully frees the snagged bandage. Outside the door, Danny tries the detonator again.
Well, did you check the batteries?
Linus takes a package of batteries from his pocket.
No. You lose focus in this game for 1 second.
I know. Somebody gets hurt. I hear Yen complaining.
They change out the batteries and press the button. They both duck. Straightening, they peer open-mouthed at the closed door. The thieves cautiously step closer, and Linus removes the triangular device. Now inside the vault, Danny and Linus survey the smoky room. Coins lie scattered all around.
Yen?
A destroyed lockbox rolls aside, and Yen crawls out from the wreckage. Facing his cohorts, the short acrobat throws his hands up.
What the hell you been?
Danny and Linus shrug timidly.
Sorry.
Now, on Livingston's monitor, Danny, Linus, and Yen gather blocks of cash in the center of the vault. Saul watches with the others.
That is the sexiest thing I have ever seen.
Smiling, Livingston speaks into his microphone.
Rusty, you're up.
Walking the casino floor, Rusty dials a cell phone. Meanwhile, Tess and Benedict leave the arena.
You gonna answer that?
I don't have a cell phone.
Tess quizzically reaches into her pocket and pulls out a phone.
This isn't mine.
See who it is.
Hello?
May I have a word with Miss Benedict?
It's for you.
The couple stops walking and Benedict takes the phone from Tess.
Who the hell is this?
The man who's robbing you.
Now Benedict and Tess enter the Bellagio security room.
What the hell's going on in the vault?
Nothing, sir. It's all normal.
Show me.
He brings up images of the undisturbed vault and guards.
I'm afraid you're mistaken.
You're watching your monitors? Okay. Keep watching.
The monitor image changes from the neat and orderly vault to the destroyed one with the thieves packing up money. Another shows the guards bound on the floor.
This town, your luck can change just that quickly.
Find out how much money we have down there.
Sure.
As Benedict stares at the monitors with an intense gaze, Tess looks off thoughtfully. Her image blurs. She remembers standing with Danny at the restaurant. As he kisses her cheek, Tess closes her eyes. Danny slips the cell phone into her pocket. Back in the security room, Tess stares with a distant gaze.
Tess. Perhaps you should.
Perhaps I should what?
It would be better if you weren't around here for this.
Tess glares at her boyfriend, then heads out. As Benedict turns his back to her, he lifts the cell phone to his ear.
All right. You proved your point. You broke into my vault. Congratulations. You're a dead man.
Maybe.
Maybe. May I ask how you expect to leave?
Do you believe I'm going to allow you to parade bags full of my money out my casino doors?
No. You're going to carry it out for us.
Why would I do that?
Take a closer look at your monitor.
Walsh hands him a card.
As your manager's probably reporting to you now, you have a little over $160 million in your vault tonight. You may notice we're only packing up about half that. The other half we're leaving in your vault, booby-trapped, as a hostage.
You let our $80 million go, and you get to keep yours. That's the deal. You try and stop us, we'll blow both cash limits.
Tess approaches Rusty and lifts her eyebrows. He looks at her and blinks calmly.
Mr. Benedict? You can lose $80 million tonight secretly, or you can lose $160 million publicly. It's your decision. Hi.
Rusty quickly covers his phone and smiles at Tess. Benedict stares thoughtfully at his phone, then faces Walsh.
Make the call.
The casino manager takes a phone from a clip on his waistband and dials.
911 emergency response.
With Tess.
Where's Danny?
And he's fine. He's in good form. He requests that you go upstairs and watch TV.
He does.
We have three men with explosives who have taken control of our vault.
Walsh gives a firm nod to Benedict.
Okay. It's all right, Tess.
You have a deal.
I promise. Fantastic. Here's what you do.
Tess watches Rusty walk away.
The guys in the vault will deposit six bags into the vault elevator. The elevator will rise to your cages. Three of your guards will pick up the bags and carry them out into the casino. Now, if they take more than 20 seconds to reach the casino floor, or there's any indication a switch has been made, we'll blow the money in the bags and the money in the vault.
Benedict faces his security officers.
He's in the casino by the slots.
Of course I'm in the casino. In fact, I'm staying in your hotel. I have two words for you. Mini bar.
Now three guards carry two bags each through the casino.
As soon as your guards hit the casino floor, a white, unmarked van is going to pull up in your valet station. Your guards will load the bags into the van's rear. If anyone so much as approaches the driver's door, we'll blow everything.
The guards load the van and it takes off.
When I get word the van is away and the money is secure, my men will exit the building. And once their safety is confirmed, you will get your vault back.
A SWAT truck arrives.
My team is here. All right. Now, I have complied with your every request. Would you agree?
I would.
Good, because now I have one of my own. Run and hide. Run and hide. If you should be picked up next week by a $100,000 sports car in Newport Beach, I'm going to be supremely disappointed because I want my people to find you. And when they do, rest assured, we're not going to hand you over to the police. So my advice to you again is this. Run and hide. That is all that I ask.
Benedict stops pacing and takes the phone away from his ear. He eyes it quizzically. Rusty's phone sits open on a counter in the casino. In the suite, empty chairs face Livingston's blank monitors. In the vault, feet stride across the floor. Outside, the van cruises down the strip, followed by several sedans. In the security room, Benedict paces.
Mr. Benedict, our guys say that van is headed toward McCarran Airport.
Get everybody in position. I want my vault back before that van hits the tarmac.
Now, six SWAT team members wearing large black helmets slide down the elevator shaft on ropes and approach the closed elevator door, guns drawn.
Night goggles on. Prepare to cut power.
From the security room, Benedict watches the three masked thieves gather around the piled money. He lifts a walkie-talkie.
Cutting power now. Do it.
The screens go black.
Breaching elevator doors now. We have two guards, bound, unconscious. Wait a minute.
Guys, guys, someone's here! Hit them down, now! I got it!
A security officer hits some keys on his computer, and images return to the monitors. On one, some SWAT team members untie the guards. On the other, smoke fills the vault and paper floats around in the air.
What's going on? Talk to me.
It appears a high explosive incendiary device has been detonated. I repeat, has been detonated. Continuing search for survivors.
Tell him to take the van. I'm going down there.
And find that honey hooked into my system!
Yes, sir.
Meanwhile, outside, the van pulls into an airport. It speeds between some helicopters on the tarmac and a huge hangar. As it comes to a stop, the sedans form a half circle around it. Men in suits get out of the sedans and aim pistols. One crouches behind his open passenger side door.
Get out of the van now! Now!
The van sits motionless, its brake lights shining. The lead man looks to the others.
Tires. Tires.
They all shoot at the van's wheels, and the tires go flat. Meanwhile, in her hotel suite, Tess paces around a lavishly furnished living room. She wrings her hands and rubs her forehead. In the vault, Benedict paces as he listens to the SWAT leader.
Sir, our search has yielded no suspects, nor are we able to determine at this time how they entered or exited the premises.
Take your men out.
Sir, may I suggest you stand outside until the bomb squads it. It's your vault. Blue team, move it out!
Still wearing their helmets, the SWAT team members leave the vault. Benedict shifts from side to side, then lifts the walkie-talkie to his lips.
Walsh, where are we with a van?
At the airport, the lead man reaches for the driver's door with his gun drawn. As he swings it open, he faces robotic controls linked to the steering column. A small video camera set at eye level turns to face him. His image appears on Virgil's monitor in a car parked 50 yards away. Reuben sits beside him.
Okay, I just want to try something here for a second.
Virgil enters a command.
There's nobody inside!
The car pulls forward a few feet and stops.
Oops. Oh, I'm sorry. Oop. Oh, no.
Enough monkey business. Do it already.
Virgil smiles and types. At the van, the men hold their guns ready to fire as they step closer to the vehicle. An explosion blows the rear doors open. Fire and smoke fill the van and papers scatter across the ground.
Mr. Benedict, we took the van, sir.
And?
And they say that there was no money in the bag, sir.
What do you mean there's no money in the bags?
They say the bags were filled with flyers, sir, for hookers.
Benedict stands in the destroyed vault. Similar flyers litter its floor.
Walsh, cue up the tape to the robbery.
He kicks debris from a Bellagio logo on the floor.
Sir, I'm looking at the tape now.
Does it say Bellagio on the vault floor?
No, it doesn't. I don't understand.
We had it installed on Tuesday. The images we saw of those men robbing us was a tape.
What?
Benedict shakes his head.
It was staged. Somebody made a duplicate of my vault. And what we saw on the monitor wasn't actually happening.
I don't understand. What happened to all that money?
Now, crossing the casino floor, the SWAT team files out, each carrying two duffel bags. One lifts his face shield. It's rusty. In a flashback, Benedict faces Walsh.
Make the call.
Walsh dials his phone. A computer shows the call being transferred. Livingston talks into the microphone.
911 emergency response.
In the elevator shaft, the thieves descend in SWAT gear.
Night goggles on.
Clear.
XFL.
They lower their face shields. In the vault, Linus, Yen, and Danny sit on the pile of cash.
Breaching elevator doors now.
In the dark, the thieves load the cash into duffel bags. One throws a canister into the vault.
Guys, someone's here! Someone's here! Take him down! Now! I got him!
Rusty calmly fires a machine gun into the air, then blocks his eyes from a bright flash. Later, Rusty and the crew exit the lobby to the SWAT truck. As they get in, the Royal Pine car freshener dangles from the rearview mirror. Civilians standing near the valet station watch the truck drive off, its red and blue lights flashing. In the vault, Benedict thoughtfully shifts his gaze, then looks over his shoulder. He hurries out. Later, he strides down a hall. Benedict quickly approaches the burly twins guarding the storage room door. Frowning, he points toward the room. Inside, Bruiser punches Danny's gut, knocking him off his feet. Benedict enters.
Hey, Benedict. How's the other fight going?
Followed by the twins, Benedict soberly looks down at Danny.
Pick him up.
Each twin grabs Danny under an arm and hoists him to his feet. Danny looks at his untucked tuxedo shirt, then faces Benedict.
Do you have a hand in this?
Did I have my hand in what?
Hands on his hips, Benedict nods, keeping his gaze fixed on Danny.
I'm going to ask you one more time. Did you have a hand in this?
Danny meets his gaze and shrugs.
Benedict, I have no idea what you're talking about.
The two men stare at each other. Benedict nods curtly.
Okay. You're free to go.
Now in her suite, Tess paces. She answers the phone.
Hello.
Turn to channel 88.
Who is this?
Tess hangs up and turns on the TV. On screen, the twins walk Danny down the hall away from Benedict.
What happened, Benedict? Did you get robbed or something?
Stop.
The twins and Danny turn around. As Walsh and Benedict approach them, Tess watches tensely. Benedict steps close to Danny.
I'm going to give you one last chance. Where is my money?
What if I told you I could get your money back? If you give up, Tess, what would you say?
Tess shakes her head slightly. Benedict stands motionless.
I would say yes.
Tess stares, unblinking. She grabs her purse and coat from the sofa.
I know a guy. We're in the joint together. Anybody pulls any job in the Western United States, he knows about it. You give me 72 hours, I'll find out who took your money.
In the hallway, Benedict blinks and nods slowly.
You know a guy. Show Mr. Ocean the exit and contact the police. I'm sure he's in violation of his parole.
Yes, sir.
Danny keeps his gaze on Benedict, who turns and walks away. He and the twins turn back around and head for a door. In the casino, Benedict looks out onto the floor as he saunters toward an elevator. He taps the call button with his fist. The elevator doors slide open, revealing Tess. She meets Benedict's gaze, then walks past him.
Tess.
Benedict glances after her.
Tess.
She looks back.
You of all people should know, Terry. In your hotel, there's always someone watching.
Tess walks away. Standing on the elevator landing, Benedict watches her pass through the crowded casino. Now he steps into the elevator. As he turns sharply to face the closing door, his brown eyes fix forward with an intense gaze. Now light spills into the dark warehouse through its open door. The SWAT truck approaches, rolls up a ramp, and blocks out the light as it parks inside. Now Danny's crew walks out of the warehouse. Linus leads the team out, followed by Yen, Livingston, Turk, Basher, Rusty, Saul, and Frank. short distance away, illuminated water from the Bellagio fountain rises in clusters of individual chutes, then slowly subsides into a glittering mist. In the casino, Tess walks with a steady pace. Her gaze shifts thoughtfully. As her brow furrows, her pace gradually slows to a stop. A small smile creeps across her lips, and she continues toward the door. Her steady stride quickens to a jog. Reaching the driveway, she spots two police officers leading Danny away in handcuffs. She runs after them.
Wait! Wait!
The police proceed to a squad car.
Wait! Wait, that's my husband.
As the officers start to put Danny into the back seat, Tess catches up.
Dean.
Tess, I told you. I knew what I was doing.
I didn't.
All right, let's go.
How long will you be?
3 to 6 months, I guess.
Danny sits in the back seat and the police close the door. Through the car window, Danny meets Tess's gaze with a smile. Tess nods and gives a slight smile in return. The police car pulls away. Tess stands motionless, staring after the squad car. Now at the fountain, the illuminated chutes of water sway, spraying the pool and blurring the lights of the strip. Standing at the fountain's basin, Virgil stares blankly toward the display. Beside him, leaning on the railing, Livingston gazes thoughtfully. Thasher's eyes lift in a faraway gaze. Turk peers straight ahead, nodding slightly. Beside him, Rusty leans his elbows on the railing, his blue eyes blinking thoughtfully. Saul's gaze darts slightly under his floppy hat. Linus stares blankly, chewing gum. Yen smiles, his arms folded on the stone railing. Beside him, Frank grins. Holding a cigar in one hand and a gold-capped walking stick in the other, Reuben smiles with satisfaction. Rusty looks to his right and grins at Saul. The old man nods. Rusty turns to his left and gazes at the others. Turk meets his gaze briefly. Giving the fountain a final thoughtful look, Rusty straightens, pats Saul on the back, and takes off. Silhouetted by the fountain's glow, Turk spins away from the others and heads off, followed by Basher. One by one, Livingston, Virgil, Yen, and Frank leave in different directions. With his cigar in his lips, Reuben smiles at Linus and Saul before he turns to go. Linus looks to Saul, trades a grin with him, then walks off. Saul rubs his palms on the stone railing and returns his gaze to the fountain. He lets out a sigh, then gently pushes himself away from the basin and trudges off, blending with people passing by. As he leaves, the water spray towers into the air. Fade to black.